We are PRN. 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 Progressive Radio Network. Stay tuned. Tuned. Live from New York, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting video streaming live from our studios in New York City, and I welcome you. You can watch today's show by going to Ustream channel looking for Gary Null. Also, we have hundreds of videos, documentaries, and educational new nutrition and health clips that you've never seen before. I've done over 100. I have 400 more to go, and I'm doing them as many as 30 a day. So I'm getting them up on our YouTube. Go to Gary Null YouTube, and you can see them there for free, and they're public service. Today, we're going to talk about vitamin D3 supplements, helping women build muscle even after menopause from Sao Paulo State University. From Harvard School of Public Health, butter is not back, limiting saturated fat, still best for healthy heart health. Also from Harvard Medical School, a clinical trial, vegetables and a specific extract can treat Alzheimer's and also treat autism better than drugs. Also from Harvard, a study finds childhood stress impacts adult health. And from Tulane University, eating peppers can help you live longer and more. Then a special commentary from Professor Henry Giroux from Counterpunch, The Curse of Totalitarianism and the Challenge of an Insurrectional Power Grab. Then also today, an in-depth discussion, something I want to do for a period of time, what I hope is wrong. I really want everything I'm going to share with you to be inaccurate. But it's not. And it's what I believe will be happening to the economy in the very near future, starting now and going over the next maybe 24 months. And this tells you the story in great detail, fully documented by William Edstrom in Collapse, Waiting for the Collapse, U.S. Debt Bombs Bursting from Counterpunch. I'll be adding my own commentary into it as well, showing you the problems in our economy. How everything you're seeing, everything you're hearing is an illusion. We are completely, totally bankrupt. Corporate America, there are corporations that are not, there are individuals who are not. Remember, it all doesn't happen the same way to everyone. But for about 270 million Americans, you're going to get slammed hard. I'll give you what cities are likely to go bankrupt, which states, yes. You heard me right. The bonds, including municipal bonds, are going to default. We're in for a big downturn, I believe. Now, again, I hope I'm wrong, but I'll give you very specific information. Let's begin. We know that the sunshine vitamin is one of our most important. We need about 20 minutes of direct sunlight a day over about one-third of our body so the skin can then convert the sunlight into vitamin D3. Or taking a supplement of 3,000 to 5,000 units of vitamin D3 a day also works beautifully. This is from a major study published in the North American Menopause Society magazine. It says, quote, "The benefits of vitamin D supplements for postmenopausal women have been widely debated, but a new study at Sao Paulo, Brazil University now documents that vitamin D supplement can significantly increase muscle strength and reduce the loss of body muscle mass in women as late as 12 plus years after menopause." So let's say if you had menopause at 55, you could be 67, 68 and still benefit. So women had significant increase in muscle strength, 25%. By using vitamin D. Quote, "We concluded that the supplementation of vitamin D alone provided significant protection against the occurrence of sarcopenia, which is a degeneration of loss of skeletal muscle, says the authors of the study. So that's good. Make sure you get your vitamin D3 and keep your muscle mass. From Harvard School of Public Health, published in the Journal of the American College of Cardiology, they did a study, and what they found is that people who replace saturated fat, mainly found in meats and dairy foods, in their diets, with refined carbohydrates, did not lower the risk of heart disease, according to the study led by researchers at Harvard's T.H. Chan School of Public Health. On the other hand, those who replace saturated fats with unsaturated fats, like nuts and whole grains, lowered their heart disease risk. Unfortunately, a lot of people are eating carbs, including a lot of vegans who are eating carbs. But if you are a vegan and eating unhealthy carbs, you're going to be an unhealthy vegan. Especially refined carbohydrates like white bread, white pastas, bagels, toast, buns, muffins. And when they reduce saturated fat in the diets, unfortunately, they may think, okay, I'm getting rid of saturated fats, but they're loading up with these unhealthy fats and these other carbohydrates. Quote, in terms of heart disease risk, saturated fat and refined carbohydrates appear to be similarly unhealthy. So, give up on all animal proteins and give up on all unhealthy processed carbohydrates. Instead of white rice, brown rice. And simple. Instead of instant oatmeal, steel-cut oatmeal, or what is called Scottish oatmeal or Irish oatmeal. It takes maybe 5 minutes to prepare instead of 60 seconds, but it's much healthier, and it also has oat beta-glucan. So simply eat more wholesome food, what I call vitalism. A vitalism is seeking that which has vital life energy in it, and that enhances your own. So that's a good study. They studied 84,628 women in this study, and they found diabetes, cardiovascular disease, and cancer would be impacted, and you'd have far less cases of heart attack if you gave up the animal fats and the simple carbohydrates. And by the way, when you're giving up simple carbohydrates, more often than not, you're giving up simple sugars. From Harvard Medical School, a study published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences entitled Sulforaphane Treatment of Autism Spectrum Disorder found that broccoli sprout extract significantly improved the behavior of boys and men suffering from autism. Quote, dietary sulforaphane of recognized low toxicity was selected for its capacity to reverse abnormalities that have been associated with autism spectrum disorder, including oxidative stress and lower oxidant capacity, depressed glutathione synthesis, reduced mitochondrial function, yesterday I mentioned mitochondria, and oxidative phosphorylation. In lay language, it means in this placebo-controlled randomized pilot study, they had a 46% noticeable improvement in social interactions and 42% improvement in verbal communications. Now, mind you, this is remarkable because we're talking about one single nutrient, sulforaphane, one single food, broccoli sprouts. Now, could you imagine if they gave them, as I would, and a lot of parents are, and seeing a complete reversal of autism. In fact, we've had those people, the parents, the Ortegas, and the son, Jonathan Ortega, on this program. In fact, just to put it on the record, I brought the Ortegas to a major scientific conference where I was one of the keynote speakers and presenters of a scientific paper based upon a clinical study I'd done in Washington, D.C., and out comes Jonathan with little notes showing he was outstanding student of the week for 10 months in a regular school. And he'd reversed it. And afterwards, hundreds of these scientists, there were about 7,000, came out in the hallway to talk with the parents about what had done. And I said, clean up the diet. No sugars. No carbonated beverages. No caffeine. no fried food, no animal proteins, no gluten, none of the gluten products, no wheat, and no cell phones up by the head. And then methylated, remember this, everyone, for any form of autism, methylated folic acid, methylated B12 at 1 milligram, and then probiotics 3 times a day, because almost the vast majority of kids and adults suffering from autism spectrum disorder have mitochondrial dysfunction and inflammation in the gut. Plus, 3 times a day, black cumin seed oil. Now, if you have trouble with it, then simply put it into a protein shake. And that is easy to get in, and then see the difference. So, imagine if you did those things and got your broccoli sprouts. And by the way, I predict that within the next 3 to 4 years, broccoli sprouts will be considered one of the must-eat items from the vegetable family every single day, because of all the other things it's going to be shown that it's doing for people. And I would eat 4 to 5 ounces a day, which is not a lot. A new study shows that magnesium, quote, is needed for more than 300 biochemical reactions in the body. It helps maintain normal muscle and nerve function, keeps heart rhythm steady, supports a healthy immune system, and keeps bones strong. It also, by the way, regulates blood sugar, so it's good for diabetes and prediabetes. It promotes normal blood pressure and is known to be involved in energy metabolism and protein synthesis. That's all good. What's the limitation? We're deficient in it. We're not getting enough. So, my suggestion, take some supplements each day, between 600 to 1,200 milligrams of magnesium from citrate. Also from Harvard School of Public Health, published in the Journal of the American College of Cardiology, a 45-year study of nearly 7,000 people born in a single week in 1958 found that psychological distress in childhood, even when conditions improved in adulthood, was associated with a higher risk of heart disease and diabetes later in life. Now that means, in just lay language, that people with childhood trauma, abuse, emotional neglect, kids that were not getting the attention they deserved or needed, far more likely to have these physical ailments later in life. But also, there's a big body of science showing that these would also have more likely to be depressed, anxious, hyper, agitated, argumentative, demeaning, demanding, cloyingly needy, and insecure. The base is insecurity. Everything else, including fear, comes when their needs are not met, and therefore they destroy every relationship they're in, because nobody can satisfy the needs of someone who's coming from insecurity. It just isn't going to happen. That's why we need to help people who have these problems, and most people are just not aware that they have them. Also from Tulane University, a good study published in the British Medical Journal, people who have a taste for chili peppers and other hot spicy foods, you're going to live longer. A big study of 500,000 adults over 7 years found that the participants who ate foods flavored with chili peppers every day reduced their risk of premature dying by 14%. So, think of all of our friends living in communities that love spicy food. You think the people living in Mexico or South America like spicy food? They do. And that's one of the reasons that they're able to live longer lives. But how about the people in India that have extraordinarily spicy food? Everything is spicy there. They also are able to have longer lives. That's our health and nutrition segment. By the way, from our public health segment today, this is the latest. This is from the Free Thought Project from Jay Simorphalus. A new bill that is HB 985. It's a Norwegian bill. It's being presented by Republican Jason Villalobos out of Texas. would have teachers diagnose, the teacher diagnose psychological issues in children, and then report them to the police. You heard me correct. Now with HB 985, that legislator intends to give school officials the authority to force psychological screenings of students that teachers and staff diagnose as having mental health issues. And once the process is set in motion by school officials, parents would be forced to take their children to a mental health professional within 30 days under threat of suspension of the child from school. And you know what they're going to do? They're going to find normal behavior to suddenly be abnormal behavior, and they're going to be diagnosing your kid as some brain chemical imbalance, which they do not have. And then your kid's going to be sent for formal prescriptions. They're all going to be put on psychiatric meds. So for those of you, they wouldn't be floating this if the pharmaceutical industry wasn't behind it. Likely ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, behind this are big dollars. Could you imagine if you got even 10% of the kids on drugs? Oh, I forgot. We have 10% of the kids in America on drugs. It's very profitable. Now let's bump it up to 40 or 50%. In time, they will have pathologized all of life. And unfortunately, they're almost there. I'm sure some of you yesterday saw President Obama's speech before the UN. This is from Michael Hudson, and it's from Counterpunch. Orwell at the UN. Obama redefines democracy as a country that supports U.S. policy. Quote, in his Orwellian speech at the United Nations, President Obama said that if democracy had existed in Syria, there never would have been a revolt against Assad. But that, he meant ISIL. Where's democracy, he said. There's no evidence of a revolution when you have democracy. This was his threat to promote revolution and coup and violence against any country not deemed a democracy. In making this hardly veiled threat, he redefined the word in the international political vocabulary. Democracy is the CIA's overthrow of Mossadegh in Iran to install the Shah. Democracy is the overthrow of Afghan's secular government by the Taliban against Russia. Democracy is the Ukrainian coup behind Vats and Poroshenko. Democracy is Pinochet in Chile, and on and on. It's, what was it Lyndon Johnson said, our bastards, with regard to the Latin American dictators installed by U.S. foreign policy. A century ago, the word democracy referred to a nation whose policies were formed by elected representatives. Ever since ancient times, democracy was contrasted to oligarchy and aristocracy. But since the Cold War and its aftermath, that is not how the U.S. politicians have used the term. When an American president used the word democracy, he means a pro-American country following U.S. neoliberal policies. No matter if a country is a military dictatorship or the government was brought in by a coup, such as the Color Revolution, as in Georgia and Ukraine, a democratic government has been redefined simply as one supporting the Washington Consensus, NATO, and the International Monetary Fund. It is a government that shifts policymaking out of the hands of elected representatives to an independent central bank whose policies are dictated by the oligarchical centered in Wall Street and the City of London, Frankfurt. Given this American redefinition of the political vocabulary, when President Obama says such countries will not suffer coups, violent revolution, or terrorism, he means those countries safely within the U.S. diplomatic orbit will be free to destabilize their own, with the help of our State Department, Defense Department, and Treasury. Countries whose voters democratically elect a government or regime that acts independently, well, they'll be destabilized, Syria-style, Ukraine-style, Chile-style. As Henry Kissinger said, just because a country votes in communist doesn't mean that we have to accept it. It is the style of color revolution sponsored by the National Endowment for Democracy. So that is something I think we should pay a little bit of attention to. We're going to take a break and come back. Before we do, because I want to get in some really serious topics, from Glenn Greenwald. Obama the Peacemaker. By ordered military actions in seven countries, what President Obama means is that he has ordered bombs dropped and he has extinguished the lives of thousands of innocent people in seven different countries, all of which just happen to be predominantly Muslim. The list includes one country where he twice escalated a war that was being waged when he was inaugurated, Afghanistan. Another where he withdrew the troops to great fanfare only to then order a new bombing campaign, Iraq. Two countries where he converted very rare bombings into a constant stream of American violence, featuring cluster bombs and signature strikes, Pakistan and Yemen. One country where he continued the policy of bombing at will, Somalia. One country where he started a brand new war, even in the face of congressional rejection of his authorization to do so, leaving it in tragic shambles, Libya. That doesn't count the aggression by allies that he sanctioned and supported in Gaza, nor the proxy wars he enabled, the current Saudi devastation of Yemen, nor the whole new front of cyber attacks he has launched, nor the multiple dictators he has propped up, nor the clandestine bombings that he will still to be confirmed the Philippines. As the military historian and former U.S. Army Colonel Andrew Bakvich noted in the Washington Post, after Obama began bombing Syria, quote, Syria has become at least the 14th country in the Islamic world that U.S. forces have invaded or occupied or bombed, and in which American soldiers have killed or been killed. And that's just since 1980, end quote. That is the fact by itself renders tribalistic Westerners who obsessively harp on the violence of Muslims, well, it's just a self-deluded joke. The overall record for the 2009 Nobel Peace Prize laureate is one of violence, militarism, and aggression that has left a pile of dead bodies of innocent people, that Obama feels the need or desire to boast about how many countries he's bombed, and that the only mainstream criticism of him in the Iran debate is that he is too unwilling to use more aggression and force, says a lot about Obama, but even more about the U.S. political culture, and none of it is good. Back in a moment.
Life could be a dream if I could take you up in paradise up above. If you would tell me I'm the only one that you love. Life could be a dream, sweetheart. Hello, hello again. Shaboom, and hoping we'll meet again. Oh, life could be a dream if only all my precious plans would come true. If you would let me spend my whole life loving you.
Some music from the 1950s. Our sister station, WBAI in New York, is in severe financial straits. Right now cannot pay its payroll, cannot pay its rent, cannot pay its bill for the Empire State Building. In effect, it's out of cash. Doesn't even have the money to send out premiums, even though the premiums are packaged and ready to go and have been for weeks. So to help it, the station manager asked, would I do something? And I said I would certainly help because our goal is to see BAI survive. So here's what we're going to do, and this will be interesting. We're going to set aside an evening. All the proceeds go to WBAI. I'm donating my time and a film. The film is Saving the Planet One Bite at a Time. It will be Friday, October 9th. That's just a week away. It'll be at 86th Street in Amsterdam at the West Park Presbyterian Church. But here's what makes it unique. I have a new book. It's coming out. It will be the definitive book for vegetarianism, which is really gaining some traction and saving the planet. It's called The Healthy Vegetarian. It's a big book. It's 700 pages. But it also shows you how, by being a vegetarian, you are saving the planet. It goes into all the different diseases that we could prevent if we shifted over to a healthy vegan diet, a plant-based diet. It's all scientifically referenced, outstanding reviews on it. I mean, a who's who of the most important thinkers in the world have given a thumbs up on the manuscript. Well, the publisher has agreed to do a special advanced edition of the book prior to its official publication, so everyone coming to the screening will get a copy of the book. It is normally $30, $29.95. You're getting it as a part of the premiere. You're going to get a copy of the film to take home. You're getting a copy of this 700-page The Healthy Vegetarian book. It is the most important book I've written in a long time. It's going to save lives. It's going to help people save the planet. And it tells you everything about our environment. By the way, for anyone wanting to know the environment, but it might be too technical for the average person to understand everything about circulating currents and El Ninos, this explains it in lay language. So everything about the destruction of our environment, acidification of the oceans, the coral reefs bleaching, hydrofracking, everything that's important about our environment, all the tipping points are dealt with in here in lay language. So you will become highly educated on the environment, plus on dieting, plus on veganism, all this combined in this one book, and it's yours. The publisher is actually coming up from Florida to deliver the books in person. So as you exit the screening, you'll be given a copy of the book, plus you'll be given a copy of the movie to take home. Now, normally this whole package would run you $85. You're paying $49.95. All of that is to support the station. All of it. All right? And so here's what you do. If you want to join me, I'll be there, and hopefully we'll have an outstanding panel there as well. Call 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. You will receive the book. You will receive this premium. You'll receive the movie. You'll receive a copy of the movie, because I'm handling all that. This isn't one of the situations where you call in, station doesn't have the money. No. I'm supporting all this to make sure that the venue, which is a beautiful venue, and hopefully we'll do two showings one night. My goal is to raise $40,000 for the station, to pay the salaries, to pay the rent, to help them pay. So let's work together. Come to the screening of Saving the Planet One Bite at a Time. Powerful film. When I say powerful, it is powerful. And watch this movie, which will, it'll wake you up. And then get a copy of The Healthy Vegetarian. And then get a copy of the film and help save BAI, educate yourself, and have a whole series of insights into how to help understand diabetes, heart disease, high blood pressure, cholesterol, cancers, and what we can do with our lifestyle to change that. Call 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. It is one way that we can help at least keep BAI from becoming insolvent, because here's the downside. If the station doesn't have the cash to pay for the premiums from any program, then the people are not going to support the station. If they don't, ideally they should, just because the station has provided them with so much. We shouldn't have to offer premiums. In a perfect world, we wouldn't have to, but every time we've tried that, never worked. So we selected premiums that are in perfect alignment with the mission of Pacifica, the communities, because think of all the different people in the communities of New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut listening right now, who have illnesses that were caused by a meat-based diet, by a standard high-processed sugar diet, and didn't understand. I have a whole chapter in here about sugar. I have a whole chapter in here about fats and healthy fats, non-healthy fats, about the planet, about how much methane an average cow gives off, and why we're growing 12 billion animals a year right here in the United States, and what that's doing for the methane and global warming. All this comes together, all of it, in one night. So this way, you'll get your premium. And with that money, BAI will have the stamps to send out all the hundreds of premiums sitting there. And with that money, BAI can pay its underpaid, overworked staff. From Andrea Katz, who without her, the station would simply collapse, and Tony Ryan and Michael G. Haskins, the few people who are paid, these people are working at the bottom end of the quality of life scale, because they believe in the station. So let's get these bills paid? And right now, there's no other answer. There's none. There's no savior with money coming from anywhere. All the other efforts we've made, hundreds of premiums that have been purchased in the past that I purchased and out of my pocket, and we've done as much as we can do. This is something to help us now. Call 877-627-5065. It is, again, Friday, October 9th, 7 p.m., West Park Presbyterian Church, corner of 86th Street and Amsterdam, a beautiful venue, my opinion, better than the Ethical Culture. I love Ethical Culture. I've done so many premieres there, but it's so large. Yeah, it holds about 1,000 people, but this is, holds 400 people, so you're a lot closer to the screen, and it'll we'll just do two showings. That's all. Call now. It's only $49.95. That's it. That's a low amount of money for all that you're getting. Okay? We'll be back in a moment. Please stay with us.
Mr. Sandman, bring me a dream. Make him the cutest that I've ever seen.
I'd like to share now some specific insights into why I believe our economy is going to be collapsing over a period of time because of debt. I've mentioned it many times in the program that we are bankrupt as a society. There are individuals who are not. There are probably about 40 million Americans who've lived very responsibly, live within their means, don't spend more than what they have, and chose to be patient and wait until they earned enough to buy something instead of putting it on a credit card. There are also Americans who have no choice but to pay on credit cards, and then when they can't pay the full amount, the rate, interest rate goes up, 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 and some people can't afford even that, in which case they get really slammed with usurious rates, and then they look forward to having a SWAT team show up at their helm and suddenly find themselves into a private debtor's prison system. We've discussed this at length, and I've given you the numbers to show you how bankrupt we are. I wanted to give you some more, specifically from William Edstrom from Counterpunch. And it's been so easy for the past 15 years for local governments in the United States and state governments and government authorities and corporations, banks, hedge funds that I'm completely against, and also equity partnerships that I call them economic genocidalists, because my research show that buying companies, stripping off its assets, keeping its proprietary assets such as its trademarks and patents, and then manufacturing it outside the United States where it had been gainful employment, a quality of life living for about 50 years, it's just wrong. And 30 million Americans that way over the last 40 years have lost their jobs. But those people are praised instead of criticized. Also, just look at all the people exploiting us. The U.S. federal government spends trillions of dollars, and yet they don't have it. We pay some of the worst expenses in the world, and what do we receive for it? Now the government in the U.S. owes $46 trillion. U.S. corporations owe between $15 to $25 trillion. U.S. individuals owe $13 trillion, plus there's a $315 trillion in outstanding Wall Street derivatives. And by the way, few Americans know what a derivative is, but we as a nation are on the hook for up to $315 trillion in additional debt because of these derivatives, which means in lay language that if the economy goes belly up, if a bank goes belly up, then guess who gets rescued first and gets to take the money out of the bank, including our savings? The people who hold those derivatives, Wall Street people. So these debt figures continue to escalate with each passing month, and I'm not even including underfunded or unfunded entitlements. Detroit and Puerto Rico have only just begun the debt bombs bursting in the U.S., and the U.S. is slow-motion economic collapse. Who's next? So here's what we're going to do. And again, my hope is that I am wrong on these. But let's take a look. Mr. Dudley of the New York Federal Reserve Bank recently warned of a wave of U.S. municipal debt collapses coming soon. The problem is bigger than solely U.S. municipalities, as Mr. Dudley no doubt is aware. Chicago or L.A., which one is most likely to collapse first? Chicago. Kankakee County, Illinois, or Perry County, Kentucky? Kankakee County is more likely to go belly up first. Atlantic City or Yonkers? Atlantic City is most likely to go belly up first. One out of 25 states are already to collapse within months, as are one out of 20 U.S. cities, one out of 15 U.S. government authorities, and one out of seven U.S. corporations. Within a few years, let's say the next 24 to 36 months, many U.S. cities, counties, authorities, states, and corporations will have debt collapsed before the U.S. as a national debt collapses. A tsunami of debt collapses is hitting the United States. The causes are government officials and corporate executives who borrowed too much, easy money, plus Wall Street bankers and hedge fund vultures and vulture capitalists who lent too much easy money. Besides city, county, and state collapses, there will also be school debt collapses, hospital debt collapses, government authority debt collapses, individual bankruptcies, corporate debt collapses, and finally the nationwide debt collapse of the U.S. If change cannot be brought about fast, like increasing revenue and raising taxes, I suggest, however, that most people are going to fight and it'll be in political gridlock to raise taxes, that instead you have one flat corporate tax that nobody can get out of paying, because right now here's the game they play. Major corporations simply earn billions per corporation and pay nothing. They hide their profits in offshore accounts, and it's up anywhere between $16 to $33 trillion is hidden by individuals as well as corporate interest. So we don't get the benefit of that money. But if you had one 15% flat tax, A, that would reduce corporate taxes, individual taxes, and eliminate the personal income tax altogether. I would rather see a flat tax that you cannot have any deductions. You must pay. There's no creative accounting here. In return, that would mean that over 1,000 corporations that are paying little to no taxes would be putting in hundreds of billions of dollars a year that they're now paying not. And not only that, you take away all of those special exemptions and subsidies. That's another $300 billion. You're now close to $1 trillion. You then put a tax on every single Wall Street algorithm in every trade, and a small tax, 1%, that would bring you in between $200 to $300 billion a year. So that's what you do, and then you put an escalating sales tax on the commodities and of necessity of life, like food and clothing. You have a low sales tax that the states and municipalities can have, and then for the luxury items, you pay a high personal sales tax. If you're rich enough to buy a yacht, then you shouldn't be concerned about paying the tax on it because you can afford it. If you want a luxury car, you know, you can pay the tax on it. If you want a standard car, you pay less tax. So we do it fairly. Simple things like that. Otherwise, everything is a game. Then you eliminate the IRS completely, and that saves you over $100 billion a year. Now, besides city, county, and state collapses, there still will be school debt collapses and substantial. And get away from the places about to collapse. In my opinion, it's no different than the places where we have created endless war. We have to cut the military-industrial complex. I suggest we cut it by 90%. That would still give us $150 to $200 billion, more than enough to defend us, but then we stop all the private self-dealing of insiders inside the Beltway, and we start to save that money. We completely eliminate the current completely fraudulent, totally dysfunctional Obamacare and the healthcare system in the United States, which is a disease maintenance system. Instead, you have universal healthcare, and you support it through Medicare. You get rid of all medical malpractice, so you have no-fault medical practice, so you stop being over-tested, over-treated, over-diagnosed, and you take the profit out of medicine. That saves $2 trillion a year. These are real figures. These are not phantom figures. And now we've saved, between getting taxes, stopping the 33% to 35% of profit going to insurance companies that were behind Obamacare, and taking the profit out of these drugs, and bring health care back to where it should be, health care for all. And then you're able to stop the debt and forgive all student debt, forgive all of it. Have public education. You want a private education, you want to pay anything you can afford to pay, that's your business. You have a freedom of right to do that. But we should have state-supported two-year schools, junior colleges, four-year schools, and graduate schools that are based upon free tuition. If 27 other developed nations can do it, so could we. Also, much of the data about which collapses are forecast to come first, second, or third, and so forth, are from financial data and spreadsheets and credit ratings and revenue versus debt calculations and the like. These are projections. They're not cast in stone. Any corporation, any individual, any part of the government in the U.S. can stop borrowing too much money and can start paying off the debts they owe any time that they choose. Most likely to be the first to collapse are some U.S. cities. I'm predicting Atlantic City, New Jersey, Chicago, Illinois, Newark, New Jersey, Paterson, New Jersey, to be up among the first. If you've studied cost accounting at a graduate level, and people may not realize this, but I originally was going to be an accountant, and I graduated from college in business administration, cost accounting, and did all my work up to knowing everything except going for my final exams for to become a CPA, for example, or an accountant. So I have a lot of background in accounting. I just don't talk about it. But I study figures. And when you look at the figures, it is inescapable, the nightmare that we're facing. The next step of a set of cities most likely to collapse include Arkansas City, Asbury Park, New Jersey, Brownwood, Texas, Coralville, Fairfield, Iowa, Lafera, Texas, Lockport, New York, Maple Heights, Ohio, North Las Vegas, Nevada, Philadelphia, and Poughkeepsie, New York. U.S. cities most likely to collapse next include Baltimore, East Pennsboro in Pennsylvania, Erie, Pennsylvania, Houston, Texas, you heard me right, Jersey City, Kearney, New Jersey, New Orleans, Union City, Yonkers, and then followed by Bristol, Buffalo, Central Falls, Rhode Island, Eastlake, Ohio, East Chicago, Los Angeles, Montesine, Pennsylvania, Niles, Ohio, Orlando, Florida, Phoenix, Arizona, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, Providence, Rhode Island, Robstown, Texas, Taylor, Toledo, Ohio, Tulare, California, Two Rivers, Washington, Washington, D.C., West Haven, and Woonsocket, Rhode Island. Counties most likely to collapse first include Kankakee County in Illinois, Perry County in Kentucky, and based upon BASF's decision in September 2015 to close their nylon and epoxy unit at their Kankakee, Illinois factory, is set another accelerant in the debt collapse of Kankakee County, most likely to be followed by the economic collapse of Allegheny County in Pennsylvania, Baxter County in Arkansas, Boyd County in Kentucky, Cullen County, Alabama, Dutchess County in New York, Essex County in New Jersey, Gilchrist County, Florida, Harris County, Texas, Passaic County, New Jersey, Putnam County, Missouri, Rockland County, New York, San Bernardino County in California, and Wayne County in Missouri. And without doubt, the state of Illinois is the U.S. state's most likely to collapse first, followed by New Jersey and Arizona, California, Kentucky, and Michigan. Now, it would seem it's impossible for a state to collapse. It's impossible for a state to go bankrupt. Technically, any state can simply not be able to meet its debt and not be able to redeem its bonds. So forget the legal context. Look at the actuality. Right now in New York State, in California, they cannot, if you ask them today, pay out all that you owe in pensions. They can't. Have you met your pension obligations for all those people who worked and earned a pension, and rightfully so, working hard? They could not. We have over $5 trillion in the United States in unmet pensions. So what do you say, what do you call it when you cannot meet your obligations financially? The fact that you're a state and you have municipal bonds, or a corporation, you have corporate bonds, your county, you have county bonds, your city, you have city bonds. If you don't have the revenue and you have too much debt, then you're not meeting your obligations. The severity of the debt collapse around the United States, coupled with the impotence of the U.S. government, well, their inability to mount a rescue of the U.S. economy, because Fed funds interest rates have been at zero since December 2008 and cannot be lowered, and because the U.S. Treasury already printed $4.5 trillion out of thin air, QE1, QE2, QE3, plus they gave loans totaling $21 trillion to 22 insider banks and major corporations. That supposedly was to be paid back. More money printed on that scale will lead to hyperinflation, which will cause the U.S. dollar to become less valued. That'll accelerate the economic collapse of the U.S. And an example of worse is an increased likelihood of states like Texas making an effort, though they probably wouldn't succeed, of seceding from the Union. Think that's absurd? You have no idea what happens when you have chaos. You see, when you're thinking of what to do to help a situation, you're thinking based upon a responsible, reasoned decision in this moment. Now, just last week, 780 people on a religious pilgrim died from being stampeded through this area and being trampled to death. No one thought before they were going on this voyage, this pilgrimage, that they would die. They did. No one thought that Hurricane Sandy would wipe out so many structures, destroy so many homes, kill so many people, cause so much damage. It did. This morning, I had to cancel a meeting with Gerald Salante and some people who are going to be here in the office to work on Occupy Peace and Prosperity Project because, quote, I've got 2 feet of water in my basement, I was told from up there. They received a record-breaking amount of rain in a short period of time, and everything is flooding upstate. But not here. But it happened, and they weren't prepared. You see, it's very easy to say to people, we can rescue this based upon what circumstances. What is the context of your solution? If someone comes to see me who has a terminal illness, and that's the only people I see, you have to have a letter from your doctor and say, what do you suggest? And I make suggestions. They say, well, I can't do that. You know, I don't want to give up that. I like that. What do they think is going to be the outcome? Death has already been prescribed. Their prognosis is you have no life left. Wouldn't you assume that at that moment a person would do everything humanly possible they could to survive? 80% of the people I see will not make that journey. They just won't. But those who do benefit. If you doubt me, speak with Utrice Lead. I just saw her medical record she sent me. And it's funny. I can't tell you why it's funny. I'll let her tell you. But it's really funny why they think she's alive and doing well. But that'll be on an upcoming topic. So here we have an economy. We have debt. The old solutions don't work. Last night I did a one-hour special on the history of Pacifica and its travails and crisis. How did we get to where we're at? A lot of people participated, but one group in particular. And we had three very articulate people giving us their oral history of this. And as I said at the beginning, these are their views. You could have other views and you could be right. They could be partially right, wholly wrong, wholly right. But it's a perspective from people who participated in the system and have a different perspective because the context of their answers was they were there. They were at the table. They were in positions of responsibility. All three people had fiduciary responsibilities at the national level and at the local level. So it's not whether you could nitpick, well, this is wrong or I disagree with that. It's we're in crisis. So the old answers of how we can save Pacifica or any station won't work now. Simply won't work because you're assuming that everyone who's a part of the problem will be equally responsible, reasonable, compliant in supporting a positive solution. That's not going to happen. The people in power are not going to say, my wrong, let me change, you're not going to have people give up power. You're not going to have people give up programs. You're not going to have people change. So what is the outcome? It's inevitable. Those who want to see it collapse will be rewarded. And those who thought, well, I thought we could still save it, unfortunately didn't understand human beings have to be part of the rescue. And if they're not willing to, those who are left with part of a solution. And part of a solution, when you're dying, doesn't save you. That's why I suggested look for the future. Get the best community radio you can. Put it on the internet. Because then the voice of the communities are heard. They're represented. You don't have the overhead. You don't have the politics. You don't have the layer upon layer of conflicting and fighting people. You simply have good quality programming coming from local communities using the internet, because that's the future. The trouble is the people who are running Pacificus, many of them, not all by any means, don't understand the future is the internet. They're not looking at magazines, newspapers, televisions, and radio stations and seeing how they're all dying. I just saw a report today that Columbus, one of the big stations, 400-plus stations, is way down into the pennies, not even a dollar, value in its stock because it's losing so much. They stayed too long at the party before they realized there was another party and they hadn't left. So here we have all this debt, and we have a government that's not willing to change and politicians aren't willing to change. The vast cultural differences between U.S. regions like the Rockies, the Midwest, the Northeast, the Southeast, the coast will be exacerbated during the U.S.'s economic collapse, which I predict will happen between 2016 and 2021. At the outside, I give it 5 years. At the inside, I give it 2 to 3 years. It won't happen all at once. And which will likely increase the likelihood of states or even entire regions challenging the stupidity of the U.S. government and lots of lawsuits. State defiance of national laws, like the marijuana laws, coupled with the far-right movement, like the Tea Party or Libertarian Party, has set the stage for increased likelihood of groups protesting Washington's power. So we have these U.S. debt bombs bursting. At the same time, we have a likely consequence when you have poverty and you have dire poverty and you have massive police overreach and you have the militarization of the police and you have pensions being cut, you have a lethal health care rationing, you have escalating unemployment, you have rising crime, you have increased hunger, you have more Americans freezing to death each winter, you have possible deflation followed by hyperinflation, you have wars, you have events which could make the economy forecast even happen sooner. So on upcoming programs, I will take you around the country and tell you why certain school districts, many schools, hospitals, colleges are likely to collapse because they have taken on too much debt and they cannot pay it back. They cannot service the debt. And then I'll show you how many corporations, how many individuals have filed for bankruptcy or closed down their businesses in the last 14 years, over 55,000 factories and over 8 million people bankrupt, and yet they didn't see it coming, and so we don't see what's coming. And remember, all of higher education in the U.S. is a bubble. That bubble is bursting. Universities are most likely to financially collapse and scale back or close down. Ashland, Dowling, Detroit Academy of Arts and Sciences, Franklin Pierce. The next set of U.S. college and university most likely to financially collapse would be Bellarmine University in Kentucky, College of St. Rose, New York, Delaware Valley College, Dominican University of California, Drew University in New Jersey, Lake Forest College, Mills College, Morehouse College, and the University of Sacred Heart. And the wave of U.S. colleges and universities most likely to financially be challenged, cut back, or closed down, it's going to be a bunch of them. And they're all over the country. I'll give you the ones and why. Because everything is based upon their debt to income ratios and the servicing of that debt and the cost of servicing that debt. Even elementary and secondary school is legally mandated in the U.S. So it's unclear what the outcomes of the tsunami of public school district bankruptcies will be. Will teacher-to-student ratios mushroom up to 50 students for each classroom? Will these school districts stop paying for books and food and buses? What will happen to teacher pay and benefits? Will the quality of teaching decline even further in the U.S.? Hard to imagine. The U.S. has been falling in international educational rankings for decades now. And what will be the quality of the education? There's also the healthcare bubble in the U.S. Average physician salary, $187,200. An intentional shortage of physicians, U.S. We only have 850,000 right now. Far fewer physicians per 1,000 people than in most nations. Many new blockbuster drugs are just beyond the cost of what a person could pay. Solvadati, $85,000 per patient per year. And how can a person afford to stay in a hospital where the average stay could be $5,000 a day? The hospitals most likely to financially collapse, Blue Mountain Hospital District in Oregon, East Texas Medical Center, Guadalupe Regional Medical Center. We have a lot of places going to go belly up or be challenged and have to change. And millions of Americans will have to travel further, in many instances as many more miles, to get the life and death care they need. The looming wave of hospital debt collapse and closings result in delays for millions of Americans to get emergency care, which is extensive now. And even with Obamacare, the deductibles are extensive, medical cuts, and the political talk turning Medicare into a voucher system. So take a look around. For example, the San Joaquin Hills Corridor Transportation Authority has $2.1 million in debt for a 12-mile stretch of toll road, Route 73 in Orange County. Overly optimistic toll revenue projections fell short, and this is yet another government authority on the verge of debt collapse. Who's going to pay the $2.1 million plus interest and the fees for the 12-mile stretch of road? One out of seven corporate bonds are classified as junk with a high risk of imminent default. Many of these corporations are Fortune 1000 corporations on the verge of financial collapse during the USA's current fiscal nosedive. Valeant Pharmaceuticals, for example, has $31 billion in junk bond debt. They currently employ 17,000 people worldwide and have a monopoly on several of the 500 drugs they make. And a financial collapse of them would mean 17,000 more unemployed people. It also raises the question of who exactly is going to make those drugs, even if they're needed. And other corporations on the list of corporations most likely to financially collapse or have to change would be Radio Shack, JCPenney, Clear Channel Communications, Peabody Energy, Rite Aid, and Sears. These corporations are overextended, maxed out, living on financial edge. A couple of quarters with lower revenues makes all of the difference between financial subsistence or financial collapse to overly indebted corporations. Overly indebted junk corporations employ 25 million Americans who have about 25 million children. If only 50% of these corporations go belly up in the next 5 years, that's an additional 25 million Americans without a source of income. And where would the money come from to pay for food stamps or housing or Medicare? For another 25 million Americans in poverty, where will the money come from to pay the $400 billion lost tax revenue each year from these people? Many energy companies are in the first wave of debt collapse, including many fracking. I'm predicting, and I did 2 years ago, that fracking is a bubble. They're going to all go belly up. Gas and oil prices collapsed this year, and there is a tsunami of energy corporate debt. Right now, $1 trillion in debts that cannot be paid back. Money lent, assuming that oil and gas prices would only go up, which will leave more than 1 million more Americans unemployed. Hydrofracking pumps billions of liters of toxic carcinogenic fracking fluid into the ground in USA, which will result in millions of additional Americans in the U.S. getting cancer coming decades. How will Medicare and Medicaid pay for millions of additional Americans with cancer? And some of these energy companies likely to collapse or already collapsing, in my opinion, would be Bristol, Virginia-based Alpha Natural Resources, a coal corporation with 10,000 employees and $3.5 billion in debt. Alta Mesa Energy in Texas, 200 employees, $400 million in debt. American Eagle Energy Company, 100 employees, $250 million in debt. Arch Coal in St. Louis, 5,000 employees, $5.5 billion in debt. Armstrong Energy in New Mexico, 25 employees, $250 million in debt. Basic Energy Services in Texas, 6,000 employees, $1 billion in debt. Blackout Elk Offshore, 500 employees, $250 million in debt. California Resources, LA-based, 2,000 employees, $6.6 billion in debt. Centrus Energy in Maryland, 500 employees, $250 million in debt. Cobalt International. Anyhow, I have a list of four pages of energy companies alone that have hundreds of millions to billions of dollars employing a lot of people. Commodity companies like metal corporations have suffered since demand for metals decreased, and I'll go into those and others on an upcoming program. But we're out of time. Thank you all for listening. I look forward to sharing more tomorrow.
The shark, baby, has such